This is CITR Public Affairs. Good morning, I'm Alan Patola.
Good morning, I'm Bill Coller.
And this is a half hour of news, music, and interviews brought to you by Students for a Democratic University.
On the show today, we'll be looking at the UBC Senate over the past year with student Senator Ron Jaworski.
We have an interview with a representative of the local Emergency Response Coalition on American Intervention in Central America.
And I'll have some comments on Dr. Henry Morgenthaler's recent visit to UBC. Last Friday, Dr. Henry Morgenthaler paid his long-awaited visit to UBC. About 600 people paid $5 apiece to hear him speak, while many more were turned away at the door. Overall, Morgenthaler is an effective speaker and a good spokesperson. In case there was ever any doubt, you can tell that he believes in what he says and does. He appears to have a great personal strength, and he passes some of this on to his listeners. He's also capable of persuading people that women should have the right to choose, and that the current regime of therapeutic abortion committees is completely unacceptable. At the end of the evening, about 95% of the audience stood up to cheer him. It is worth noting that about 75% of this crowd were women. This is in contrast to the 60 protesters outside Sub, 75 to 80% of whom were men. About the same ratios were present the following night at John Oliver High School, though there may have been more families there who responded to the calls of the Catholic bishops and other religious organizations to come and harass or obstruct the people who came to hear Morgenthaler speak. But this is the one thing that Morgenthaler did not address when talking about the issue of freedom of choice and those who oppose it. While he said that religious dogma and fanaticism is an underlying reason for the persistence of the opposition in Canada, he did not mention that another reason is the factor of male domination, and that a woman's right to control her own body and what happens to it is a fundamental aspect of her right to equality. And you just had to see who the protesters were and who Morgenthaler's audience was to figure out that it is men combined with religious dogma about human reproduction who are largely blocking the way of a woman's right to choose. Morgenthaler's omission was made up, however, on Saturday night by Caroline Egan, a pro-choice activist from Toronto, who also pointed out that if women lose the right to choose, they also stand to lose the battles ahead for other rights. The abortion issue is on the cutting edge of the women's movement. Another interesting thing about the audience was its response to Morgenthaler's comments, especially during the question period. He was constantly being applauded. One of the loudest of these was when Morgenthaler expressed his disappointment with Manitoba's NDP government for busting his clinic in Winnipeg, especially because the Parti Québécois in Quebec had supported his clinics for 9 years now. One of the weakest responses, however, was when he criticized the women's movement for its failure to address the problems posed for working-class, rural, and poor women who are the most disadvantaged under the current abortion laws. It is clear that the audience had, largely, middle-class, urban roots. But this was not the case the following evening at John Oliver High School, where a lot more anger and concern for the problems of poor, rural, and working-class women in getting safe abortions was expressed. However, at both places, Morgenthaler's stated desire to open up a clinic in Vancouver met with overwhelming support. He said he was ready to train willing doctors in BC and help them open up a clinic. Let's hope that there are a few doctors of the many who get pumped out of our medical schools who are ready and willing to take the risk. One thing about this issue is that Morgenthaler can't do it alone. And, contrary to how the media tends to depict the struggle, he hasn't. Without the support of thousands, if not millions, of Canadians, his clinics wouldn't be operating in Quebec and Toronto today. And in the face of the growing violence and harassment of the opposition, this support must grow. You can support Morgenthaler and fight for a woman's right to choose by contacting the Concerned Citizens for Choice on Abortion at Post Office Box 24617, Station C in Vancouver, or call them at 876-9920. The CCCA is also passing on donations to Dr. Morgenthaler's defense fund. We salute Dr. Morgenthaler for his courage to fight for his convictions. But the next time he's in Vancouver, let's hope it's to help open an abortion clinic here in town. And this is Judy Mowat with a song called Black Woman. This year, a number of issues affecting students came before Senate as it considered how to respond to the anticipated government cutbacks in university funding. Ron Jaworski was re-elected in February to a second term as a student senator, and Alan spoke with him about the past year in Senate.
Well, I guess I wanted to start by asking you what the main issues are that have come before Senate this year that have had particular impact on UBC students.
Okay, I think this year got off to a bit of a slow start. There's a little, I call it a lull before the storm, and things seem to pick up here towards the end of the year. And of course, the big issues focused around the cutbacks. We haven't got into, you know, the meat of dealing with specific cutbacks, but we have spent a fair bit of time talking about policies, trying to establish policies, what actually the role of Senate will be, trying to extract some information out of the administration as to where they are in the process, trying to uncover a few things like that.
Is there an attempt within Student Senate Caucus to try and identify what people within the caucus feel are, say, particular interests of students on particular questions, and an effort to try and, say, vote according to what people feel those interests are? How are positions on issues formulated within the caucus?
Well, what happens is, unless we have advanced warning of some, you know, biggie coming up, unfortunately we only get about a week's notice of the agenda. And we try to have at least two caucus meetings before the Senate where we discuss the issues. Now, in a lot of cases, if, say, a particular representative of a faculty, say, of science, has had a meeting back in his faculty, usually they do discuss the matters and they get a pretty good idea. There's no formalized way of going back to the student body and trying to elicit their views, usually because of lack of time.
Right.
And again, this is where it would be very useful if we could identify a lot of these things, you know, the step back at where the ground roots of the issues are formulated by the deans and by the faculty, and also a lot of ideas can be injected by the students.
Right.
So that would give us more time, if nothing else, to be able to go back. Once we discuss things at caucus, we either will formally vote on it and formulate our position in that way, or, you know, just discuss the various strengths of each position and the weaknesses and the sorts of arguments that perhaps could be raised at Senate and questions and you know, requests for information and that sort of thing. We try to lay out a little plan of attack for the Senate meetings, who's going to ask the questions, when, what sort of points should be raised and things like that.
Do you think Student Senate Caucus does overall a good job of representing students' interests to Senate? How could it be more effective, and how could it be more effective?
Well, I think the effectiveness has, you know, sort of oscillated across the years. It really depends on the type of people that we have. You know, it's not an easy job looking at the system, let alone, you know, trying to get the interest up in the people. We're there for only 1 year, 1 year terms. We come in at a very bad time. because the terms of the new senators are just starting now. This would be the first meeting.
Right.
And you're sort of getting to know the system and what the issues are and such in April and May, and a lot of times that's when very, very important things are happening. So you don't have the benefit of any continuity, you don't have the benefit of any past experience. So you're fighting that. You're fighting the whole system that there's 17 of us, and especially if you try to get one unanimous block view, we represent such a diverse cross-section. There's, you know, everyone from first-year arts or second-year arts senators to people that are pursuing maybe their third degree.
Right.
And, you know, so although we broadly identify with what you call a student issue, even within that, there's a lot of difference of opinion, there's different viewpoints, different experiences are coming into play. So that certainly, you know, throws a little bit of a wrench into things. As far as being more effective, I'd advocate longer terms for student senators, or at least commitments from student senators to try to get in there, say, in your first or second year and be able to go through, say, 2 or 3 years. This year we have a bit of an advantage because the whole Senate turns over every third year. So last year was the turnover, so everyone was new. So there's about 3 student senators, myself included, that are in their second term, and we're, you know, new faces along with everyone else. So we're getting to know the people and the players on the Senate and on the committees, and gaining some experience and continuity that way. So that's probably the big factor, is the continuity.
Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.
And this is Farron with Almost Kissed. With the threat of direct American military intervention in Central America ever present, a number of local organizations have come together to form the Emergency Response Coalition. In January, a chapter of this coalition was founded at UBC. Bill spoke with Laura Rival, a founding member of the coalition, about its goals and her thoughts on the possibility of direct U.S. intervention in Central America.
Laura, the coalition came together in November of 1984. What groups are involved and why did you come together?
Well, there are many groups involved, and it's the first time in Vancouver that happened, so it's very good. There are around 30 groups, and they came together basically on the idea that when the U.S. invaded Grenada last year, everybody was so surprised that nothing was done, so people wanted to prepare a response to be really ready to answer if the U.S. would intervene. So that was a basic thing, to build a front tree and to get ready to prepare a mobilization in case of emergency. And most of the groups which are working on Central America decided to join, and also church groups, and it's basically very broad.
Right. How about you? Why did you decide to join the coalition?
Well, I joined a little bit later because I was not really aware of this thing going on, and what happened is that I have friends in Toronto, and they were building the same kind of coalition there, but with a different date. It was to build the mobilization for the 24th of April, which have been decided to be the International Day of Support with Central America. And what was happening there seemed so good. I was so enthusiastic, and in France it was going on in the same way, and I had news about that. But I thought it would be great to join the coalition and try to not to respond to an emergency case when it happened, but to prepare the mobilization to before it happens, you see, to do something against the intervention of the U.S.
Right. I understand you've started a coalition at UBC?
Yes, so on the same basis, there were already, you know, that at UBC there are a few groups which are working on Central America and on South America. And we were going to the coalition on the town, and we thought it would be better to be grouped at UBC, to have already this centralization on UBC and to give delegates to go to the coalition in the town. So it's why we did that.
Good. Could you give us a general picture of the extent of American involvement in Central America right now?
Well, it's pretty heavy, and it's very interesting what happens, because Reagan would like to put much more money than he does right now, but there is quite a big opposition in the House, and it's a continual battle to give more credits and to have better arguments to do so, and for example, to establish this so-called democratic government in El Salvador, to give them more money. Or also, when they cannot buy arms, they say it will be for food and for clothes. It's a new thing with the Contras now. So it's pretty heavy. I don't have data here, but just listen to the news regularly, and it's a lot of money.
Yeah, I know they've done a lot of work installing military installations in Honduras and using Honduras as a basis for their operations as well. But what do you feel is the likelihood of direct U.S. military intervention in the near future?
Well, this is a very big question, and people don't agree on that question. I will give you my own opinion. My own opinion is a bit sad, because I think that they don't have interest to intervene right now, and actually they do a pretty good job of harassing continually Nicaragua, for example. And 5 years of war, it's enormous for Nicaragua, and they are lacking of everything, and there is a starting of discontent in the cities, and it's exactly what the U.S. wants. So I think we have to focus on supporting what's happening in Central America, the revolution there now. And we have to do that more than just wait for a U.S. intervention, because for the moment I have the impression they work pretty well as they do, and they have no interest internationally, nationally. And in Central America, it's quite efficient what they do, just right that, without invading.
Mm-hmm. How about the Canadian's government, the Canadian government's role in this?
Well, the Canadian role is not as obvious as the American one, but what happened is that the American government sells most of its arms. 63% of its arms are sold to the U.S. government, which after put them in Central America. So that's one way it is involved. Another way, it's because it doesn't want to give money or to give loans to Nicaragua, for example. Another way also, it's in boycotting Central American products, especially Nicaraguan one, not distributing them widely. So all these politics are, in fact, against Nicaragua. And it's one way we have to criticize our government.
Mm-hmm. I understand the coalition is going to be part of this year's Peace Walk. Is that right?
Yes, and we're very happy, because we decided, the emergency coalition decided to belong to the arms race movement. We think that the battle we have going on right now, it's very important, because we want to stop the war in Central America, and we are pointing out who are the responsible for the war. And this is totally relevant to the issue of the peace march, because we want the peace in Central America, and we are against U.S. intervention. And on this basis, we decided to become a member, which has been accepted. And it's why we will go in the march with our contingents this year.
I suspect the White House and its allies is very aware of the numbers of people who come out to this type of event.
Yes, it's very important, especially. It's a bit sad that this year in Vancouver, the Peace March is going to be the 27th, and most of the mobilization around Central America will be the 20th in most of the countries, and especially in the United States. It's a really, really wide and large response. It's not yet at the level of the anti-war during Vietnam times, but it starts to be the same, and it's sure that it makes a difference, and the White House is taking in account this.
So how can our listeners either get involved in the preparations for the contingent or march in the contingent on April 27th?
Well, we want this contingent, of course, to be as big as possible and to show how here in Vancouver we oppose the war in Central America and we oppose the U.S. intervention. So we will have a work party the 20th, next Saturday, 7:30 p.m. at Britannia Center. It will be a party. We will have music and food, and we will prepare the banners and the chants and everything. And we have a meeting at 2 p.m. the day of the Peace March, Saturday 27th. It will be on Kitsilano Beach, just nearby the tennis courts. So I hope you will all come and join.
At 2 p.m.?
Yes.
I thought the march started at 11. I think it's 11 p.m.
Oh, okay.
Or 11 a.m.
11 p.m.
Well, thanks a lot, Laura, for coming and talking to us.
Thank you very much, and hope to see all of you there.
Okay, we'll be there.
It's a peace march.
Thanks.
Well, there's not too much happening at UBC in the next little while, but here are some events coming up elsewhere. This Saturday, the Grandview Steelers Softball Club is holding its season opener dance from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. at the Legion 179 Auditorium. That's at 6th Avenue and Commercial Drive. Admission is $5, and music is provided by the questionnaires. For more information, you can call 327-4897.
On Monday, Press Gang hosts a celebration for women involving poetry, music, and theater. Admission is by donation, and the event starts at 7 p.m. at La Cana, 1111 Commercial Drive. All women and children are welcome, and there will be door prizes.
And don't forget the End the Arms Race Walk for Peace on Saturday, April the 27th. This year's walk is co-sponsored by the City of Vancouver and the Vancouver School Board. To participate, come out to Kitsilano Park at 11:30 a.m. The march will begin there and conclude with a rally at Sunset Beach. For further information about the walk or about End the Arms Race's other activities, call 736-2366.
Well, this has been our final program for the academic year, but we'll be back in September with more campus news, info, and music produced by students for Democratic University. If you enjoyed the program, come and help us with it next year, or come to one of our meetings during the summer and see if you'd like to get involved. Our petition campaign to abolish the automatic failure for a late withdrawal is continuing into next year as well. You can drop us a line at Box 85 Sub. And Al, I guess we'll have to go and find work like everybody else.
That's right. Well, good luck over the summer. See you next fall.
Okay, I'll see you soon.
Wait.